for workers on a political campaign, long hours, low pay, and a lack of benefits are the norm. It can lead to burnout and a high turnover rate from election to election. But a new union is looking to give campaign staff better conditions. Campaign workers for Randy Brice, Democratic challenger to Republican Paul Ryan in Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District, recently became the first to unionize. Their decision is shedding some light on a job that usually exists behind the scenes. Meg Riley is the vice president of the newly formed Campaign Workers Guild. Meg, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before, Meg, we get to the union side of this, let's talk about campaign work. It feels like political campaigns are going on all the time, but for people who work in it, it's seasonal stop and start kind of work, right?
That's right. It's very cyclical. It's very much a race against the clock, so the urgency is constant. It's very much a go, go, go mentality. So a day in the life of a campaign worker is generally about a 12 or a 14-hour day, and that's 7 days a week, and that is until the day after Election Day. So it's pretty intense.
And I understand that campaign workers are not always well-treated, regardless of political party. They are maybe seen as disposable people that you just work the heck out of.
Yeah, not well-treated is an understatement. They are absolutely exploited. I mean, it makes sense, right? You have a bunch of people on either side of the political spectrum who care so much about a candidate or a cause that they're willing to move across the country, give up spending time with their family, sleep on couches for months. That type of person who's that dedicated can be really easily exploited.
And it sounds like, given how seasonal and stop and start this is, it would be a hard thing to form at least a traditional union for.
And that's part of the reason why this hasn't happened yet, is sort of wrapping your head around what would that even look like. But of course, just because your job is temporary or short or cyclical doesn't mean that you aren't deserving of the same working conditions. So we've been looking at a hiring hall model. We have members who pay more dues when they're working on a campaign and then less when they're not working on a campaign. And when they're not working on a campaign, they will have access to trainings, to job postings, and, of course, the whole community of their fellow campaign workers.
I understand among the protections you're working for is a very timely one given the news over the last year, an understanding of sexual harassment and what people's protections are.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a funny thing. There's somehow this idea that campaigns are immune to sexual harassment, and that is absolutely could not be further from the truth. In fact, I would say campaigns are even more susceptible to sexual harassment, and that's for a few reasons. The first, which is a really big one, is that people are afraid to speak up because there's this whole culture that says if you do anything to jeopardize the campaign, you truly don't care about the candidate. So people stay quiet about a lot of things, whether that's racism, sexual assault. And then you add that to the fact that there's no central HR system, and it's a really teeny, teeny field, so folks are really afraid of being put on a no-hire list. You sort of have a toxic swill that lends itself to a lot of sexual harassment.
So how, as a guild, do you start to try to organize campaign workers and get them on board?
So before we went public early last month, we sort of targeted campaigns that we thought would be amenable, or largely the campaign workers. So obviously Randy Brice, his campaign workers we knew were very pro-union. We had a contact there, so we went there. But since we've launched, we've had dozens and dozens of campaigns reach out looking to unionize. So right now, we don't really have to go to campaign workers. They're coming to us.
Talking to Meg Riley with the Campaign Workers Guild, the newly formed Campaign Workers Guild, about an effort to unionize campaign workers. Meg, what works differently for a guild of people who work on political campaigns versus a traditional union we might think about?
Sure. Well, first of all, there are a couple changes to a traditional contract. The first is a lot of the timelines. So sexual harassment investigations, for example, they can't take months on a campaign. We can't have this pushed under the rug, as it so often is. So our turnaround time for the moment that someone reports to when a report is due with a proposed action is pretty short on campaigns, first of all.
And what other differences?
Some of the other differences are also to do with sort of the benefits involved. So obviously, right off the bat, I don't think we're going to go from the average of a 100-hour work week to a 40-hour work week. But what we've been doing is getting kind of creative with paid time off, getting creative with the hours and work schedules So on a regular job, you would say it's a Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. Here we have to say, all right, it's a 3 to 9 this day, and you don't work Saturdays, but you work in the evenings. You know, we have call time at the end of the day, so folks have to be on the phone calling volunteers. We have campaign events specifically on holidays, like Labor Day parades, Memorial Day parades. So in some ways, everything is flipped. You know, we canvass more on weekends than we work on weekdays, and we work more on holidays than the opposite.
Now, if I'm a political candidate myself, and even if I'm a really nice political candidate, if I'm going to campaign, maybe I'm counting on these workers to selflessly devote themselves to the cause. I might be a little leery about adopting rules that say they can only work so much and so many times, and I have to work around that. Are you worried that candidates themselves aren't going to buy into this?
Well, the beauty of a union is that it doesn't really matter what the bosses think, right? So if we have more than 50% of the worksite who have signed on, and in every case it's been more than that, it's been a supermajority, it doesn't really matter. The workers have unionized. What comes next is bargaining the contract. And in bargaining the contract, workers have a lot of power. First of all, the press that comes with a candidate who is courting a labor endorsement but won't sit down at the bargaining table with their own employees, yeah, that kind of press is not the type of thing a candidate wants.
Generally, in American politics today, Democrats, in some areas anyway, are perceived as more pro-union than Republicans. Does that mean you target Democrats first as you organize?
So far, we have started with the Democratic Party because you're right. I mean, there is an explicit disconnect between the Democratic Party platform and how Democratic candidates have been treating their workers. We obviously, you know, the Republican Party does not have the same platform about unions. We would welcome Republican campaigns unionizing as well. We are nonpartisan as a union. We're for the workers. But yes, we are starting with Democratic candidates for that reason. I mean, it's fine time for them to practice what they preach.
Have you heard from Republican campaign workers saying, yeah, maybe I'd want to get on board with this?
We haven't heard from any yet, but if they reached out, you know, we would go through the same process with them, and we would do the same for independents, Greens, anything.
So we've got a Democratic congressional campaign now organized here in Wisconsin in this 2018 election year. What other kinds of campaigns have signed on and unionized so far?
So I'm glad you asked that question. So we have Jess King in Pennsylvania running for Congress, Chris Wilhelm, who's running for county council in Montgomery County in Maryland, and then 6 minutes before I jumped on the phone, we just finalized another contract with Andy Thorburn, who's running for Congress out in California, which is a huge win for us and for all campaign workers, of course, across the country.
And do you have more in the works where you're in contact with staff hoping to get them on board?
Yes, we have so many in the works that very few of us on the executive council are sleeping right now, so we're bargaining dozens of contracts, and so we're expecting to see a flood of those being announced in the next few weeks as well.
And are you hoping that even if not every campaign unionizes, that you can kind of change the cultural norms of what is expected of a campaign worker?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think at the end of the day, our goal is that campaign workers get health care, that they don't work for less than minimum wage, that they're not working 100-hour weeks. You know, in some cases, maybe that won't be a union for some places, and that will be, you know, some other form of building power. Maybe in some cities, it'll be like a multi-contract, you know, situation. But I do think already the conversation has changed so much. I mean, from the moment we launched, we got hundreds of people reaching out saying, this is something we've been waiting for decades. So I don't think this movement is going away anytime soon. And we have people reaching out from all across the country and Canada as well, trying to figure out how they can get more involved.
If, say, a younger person comes up to you and says, hey, I'm thinking of going into, political campaigns. I want to get a job. What do you tell them? I'm given that, you know, they're probably enthusiastic about the politics. They're devoted to it. But it's a rough job. What kind of advice do you have for them?
Well, that's a different question now that we have a union than it would have been, a year ago. That's a tough one. I would say that you have to be really committed to the cause because at the end of the day, you are moving across the country and sleeping on couches, and even if we have great contracts, it's really tough work. I mean, the work itself is really exhausting, and it's skilled labor. A lot of folks seem to think that it's just, you know, something people plug into, but It's a specific skill to be able to cold call someone while they're eating dinner and convince them to knock on doors that weekend on a beautiful Saturday morning. So it's hard. It's really, really hard work. It's not always the most respected, but it's absolutely worth it. Everyone who works on campaigns loves the work. We just want to be respected.
And I know probably the union is part of your answer to this, but how do you suggest people advocate for themselves so that their devotion to whatever the cause of the candidate is isn't taking advantage of?
Yeah, I think that, first of all, is recognizing the power that we have as working people. So the candidates, you know, people talk about volunteers, and volunteers are obviously hugely important, but the actual staff is so important to candidates, and we have that power, and it just takes us as workers to look inside and recognize that if we stand together, we have power. So that, again, that doesn't have to be formal unionization. Of course, we're seeing that for the most place, but we aren't just cogs in a machine, and I think we need to break out of that mentality that's what we are, and we're just plugging away forever and ever to get these candidates elected.
Meg, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Meg Riley, Vice President of the Campaign Workers Guild. She talked with us about conditions for workers on the campaign trail and the effort to form unions at political campaigns around the country.